Well, good afternoon. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the story behind the story, the news behind the news, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality and not illusion or delusion that's going to determine just what the future will bring. Now, I need to remind you that the views that are expressed here are certainly not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and I'm going to ask that you hold your calls until the half hour because we have a very special guest with us. At that time, you can call us at 464-8295. You can remember that is 464-TAX-L or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. But right now, Senator Don Rogers is with us, and Senator Rogers spent 8 years in the Assembly, 10 years in the Senate. He had to leave because of term limits, but certainly when he was in Sacramento, he was one of those senators, one of those legislators who always stood for our Constitution. And one of the great tragedies of today is most of our legislators neither understand nor abide by the Constitution of the United States, and they believe that whatever people want to do, they ought to be able to go ahead and do it as long as they're legislators. We've got all sorts of strange things happening in our society. Senator Rogers, it's so good to have you with us this afternoon.
Hi, Dr. Stan. Yeah, good to be with you.
Well, tell us, what do you think about this, first of all, this idea that we don't want to teach our black children to speak English. We want to teach them how to speak black English so they can have a separate culture and, in my estimation, be deprived of any opportunity to move ahead in our society.
I think it's a big mistake, Dr. Stan. It's a giant step backwards for these black students. We ought to be trying to help them to get a job and keep a job rather than encouraging them to do something that's going to make it even more difficult for them to qualify and get a job. You know, I would encourage even some of the black community leaders have come out strongly against this Ebonics. Jesse Jackson, who I rarely agree with on most of his positions, but he and I are certainly in agreement on this. And he's the one that said this is a mistake, and he's opposing it. Mayu Angelou, the lady, actually from my home state of Louisiana, she's a very, very eloquent, a black lady, eloquent with the English language, and she said the same thing. She said we should be trying to raise these students up and teach them correct English, not encouraging to go with this Ebonics. And I guess, you know, next somebody's going to come out with black mathematics. I guess that's going to be the next step, and I read a letter by a black writer, by the way, wrote a letter to the L.A. Times a few days ago. And you know what he said? He said black mathematics is going to be 1 plus 1 be 3. And, you know, he's right. We don't need any of this dragging down these black students. They're perfectly capable of learning good, correct, standard English. We don't have to confuse them with this Ebonics approach. So I think the people in Oakland, which is, of course, up very near where you are, the board up there, I think they made a terrible mistake. I think they should retract any support for this and any other school boards anywhere in this country who are considering this ought to look at it and back away from it because it's definitely a mistake and the wrong way to go.
Well, it's just like they're teaching our Hispanic children in Spanish rather than teaching them in English so that we can actually begin to divide the society increasingly. And, of course, teaching black children a separate language deprives them of being Americans. Suddenly they are African-Americans or Africans. And what the whole purpose behind this, in my estimation, is to create even increasing divisions within our already much fragmented society. Now, one of the things, of course, I know you know so much about, which the average listener really is totally unaware of, are the effect of the executive orders and the War Powers Act that goes back to 19, what is it, 1933, and it's still in effect, which really, in many respects, limits the Constitution, and they're using that to justify all these unconstitutional abridgment of our freedoms. What's that all about?
Well, you know, it started back in 1917. We were at war at that time, and there may have been some justification for giving the president certain executive powers through an executive order. But that war is over. And then in 1933, because, you know, a lot of the people in highly elected office, they like power. They don't like to have to deal with the people. They want to just do what they want to do. You know, a dictatorship is very efficient, Dr. Stan. One person decides what they want to do, and they do it. But, of course, there's not much freedom connected or none connected with a dictatorship. But anyway, in 1933, President Roosevelt, right after his inauguration, used the so-called depression and the bank problem with, you know, people supposedly having problems, runs on the bank and all of that. He used that as an excuse to get the Congress to go along and give him these executive war powers because of the so-called emergency, which really was not an emergency to justify what he did. And that literally gave the president a dictatorial power and suspended the constitutional freedoms that we have. So, you know, most people don't realize it, but I have lived almost all of my life without having the constitutional freedoms protected by the, because the Constitution has been suspended. I imagine most of your listeners fall into that same category. They don't realize that since 1930, I think it was March the 9th, 1933, when they passed this request of President Roosevelt, that from then on we've been operating without or with a suspended Constitution. Now, the World War II is over. We no longer have an emergency and threat of invasion facing our country. Nowhere. There's no way that they could justify it. Yet, president after president, administration after administration since 1933 have continued to renew this Emergency War Powers Act year after year after year. And most of the members of Congress, when they vote to continue and renew this, they don't even know what they're doing. I happened to be listening at about a year and a half ago, I guess, when this was brought up, and the Secretary of the U.S. House of Representatives just read the renewal of this act, and they just like a bunch of sheeple, they just voted right for it. And most of them, it was unanimous, most of them had no idea that they were continuing the suspension of our Constitution.
Well, let's hope that we have a few people back there who have some idea what's happening. We're going to have to take our first break right now, and we want to mention to our listeners some of the tape sets we've put together. I think really one of our best ones is on population control, and if you haven't heard our four-tape set or read our monograph on population control, I would recommend it very strongly because it will really help you to understand so much of what's going on today, why Dr. Kevorkian is tried over and over and over again, and why the courts always find him innocent. And, of course, it has to do with accepting the idea that we need doctor-assisted suicide, and from there it will be doctor-aided suicide, whether you want to or not, exactly as they had in Hitler's Germany, because the similarities between what happened when they elected Adolf Hitler to become the ruler and what's happening in America as our nation turns against God and all the rules that God has laid out over the last 6,000 years, these similarities are so frightening. This is Dr. Stan, our guest this afternoon, Senator Don Rogers, who spent 18 years in the belly of the beast in Sacramento. He's currently retired because of term limit limitations. And, of course, he's our guest this afternoon, and we're going to actually throw our lines open anytime anybody would like to call in if you have a question or comment. But one of the things I think that we really should bring out is this smog check, too, and this program that the certain people have where they really want to get people out of cars, and increasingly they're going to be bringing pressure to bear as they lower the smog emissions requirements. to the point where so many older cars, and I'm talking about cars 5 or 6 years old, are not going to be able to meet those requirements. Senator, what's really behind all of this effort, so-called smog emission controls?
Well, there are two things, Dr. Stan. One is, you know, what you mentioned, that I think, seriously, they want to get more control of people. You know, as long as people have automobiles and are free to drive around wherever they want to on their business or whatever, it's hard to keep track of them. It's hard to control them. So that's one reason. The other reason is that you're talking about some big bucks here. This dynamometer or whatever term you want to use it, use for it, is only made, the equipment's only made by, I think, maybe one or two companies in the United States. And, they want to force, all of the states, and of course, California, to use this centralized approach where they use these dynamometers, where they can actually set them up and even through remote control, they can, sense the emissions of, vehicles. And, you know, we've got a lot of small operators now that give smog checks, and the system's working pretty well. The quality of the air is getting better. But we've got really thousands of these small business people with their smog check stations. Well, all of them are going to be put out of business eventually, and we'll have just a few centralized stations, and then they will either have to come up with a huge amount of money to buy one of these new large expensive pieces of equipment, or they're going to go out of business. And there's one other thing too. That is the credits. The way it's structured, if they get, say, a car off the road and crush it, destroy it, there are pollution credits that then are provided by the destruction of this automobile. And large corporations can purchase from the whichever governmental entity it is, a city, county, or I suppose a state, they can purchase these pollution credits by taking these automobiles off the highway. Well, there's going to be some big bucks there in the fact that then the companies, corporations that have, you know, smokestack industry, they then can, are allowed to increase their emissions equal to what they reduced the emissions, when the automobile was taken off the highway.
Well, now, do I get the profit on it if
no.
they take away my car? You mean
no.
they take away my car and I don't get the profit?
No. No, you just lose your car, that's all.
Well, that doesn't seem very fair.
No, but of course, whoever said the government was fair. So, the bill that was, you know, it's a program that's being, promoted, by the agency, the Air Resources Board and the Department of Motor Vehicles and the Bureau of Automotive Repair. Those are the folks that are pushing this program. They say, well, it's because the federal government has mandated that we do. That's not true. The federal government has not mandated this program. And if you really look at the wording of it, it does not mandate. Now, what we did in Sacramento this last session, there was a bill that was passed. Assemblyman Larry Bowler was the author of the bill. And what it said that, well, under Smog Check 2, that the state of California would be prevented from confiscating any vehicles due to them being classed as a gross polluter or whatnot. But the problem with that, Dr. Stan, is that it said nothing was silent about cities and counties, local government. So they then, even though this bill passed and the governor signed it, the local government can come in and confiscate your automobile. And, so there's very little protection there just because the state is foreclosed upon doing it. And then there's another thing. It says that if you add any equipment onto your engine, and there are a lot of things out there that really reduce emissions and give you better gas mileage. Not all of them are valid, but some of them are. But if you do that, then you're classed as tampering with your vehicle, and you are denied a smog certificate. So the bill that was passed, it was silent regarding tampering with your vehicle. In other words, if you do this, you could be classed as tampering, and you could be denied a permit. Now, what's being done is there's some bills that are being written now that will be introduced or have been already that to address these problems that I just talked about. Whether or not the votes will be there to pass them and whether or not the governor will sign them, I don't know. But the program is scheduled to go into effect right after the first of the year. So it's going to take a little while, you know, to get these bills in place and get them through and get them signed if we are successful in getting them through the legislature.
Well, now, basically, when the legislatures, members of the legislature, voted for this legislation during this last couple of years, did they have any idea what they were really voting for?
No, I'm afraid they didn't.
And you were a member of the legislature.
That's right.
At the time.
That's right. No, they didn't.
I understand what they did. These people who really wanted to do this took all these little tiny bills. They were sort of like pieces of a puzzle out there, and you couldn't see the overall puzzle because all you had were all these little pieces, and it wasn't until you put them together you suddenly found that we'd created a Frankenstein.
That's right. Remember the guy that kept stealing parts at the Cadillac factory? He thought they were making Cadillacs, and when he got them home and assembled them, it turned out to be a machine gun. So, you know, you're right. It was never clear. It was very cleverly done. But we've got the problem, and now we better get about fixing it. And I think if enough people will contact their legislator and tell them that, look, the air quality is improving. And of course, just before Thanksgiving, you know, Carol Browner, who is the Secretary of EPA on the federal level, came out and announced that the feds were going to tighten up the screws even more and make the emission requirements even tougher than they are now and reduce the amount of ozone that would be allowed. You know, we can't even meet the standards now. And here they're going to tighten up the screws even more. But aside from that, it's not necessary because the air quality in most places in California is getting better. So it's something that's not needed, and it's going to cost a lot of people a lot of money because a lot of people who have automobiles that are a little older, and a lot of people can't afford new automobiles. You know, you go down and price the cost of a new automobile. You can't get hardly anything for less than $20,000-$25,000.
Well, then we can get a lot more people onto bicycles, and we can get a lot of more into public transportation. And there's a real emphasis now on getting the trains in. All of these things really, so there'll be an alternative, so they can justify getting people out of cars.
Yeah, I'm afraid you're right. But I tell you, I think they're going to have a tougher fight than they realize because just you know, the closing weeks up there in Sacramento of this last session, we had over 5,000 or 6,000 people that came up on one day protesting this smog check 2 program, and they were mad. They were there, and they wanted to make sure the legislators understood that they were mad at what was threatening to be done to them. So, you know, I tell your listeners, please write your legislators. Call them, fax them, tell them smog check 2 is not necessary, we don't want it, we don't want you taking our automobiles away from us, so please, back away. And if enough people do that, I think we can stop it, because legislators, regardless of what their personal philosophy is, if they feel the heat, they see the light. And the most important thing to them is how we get reelected, and if enough people express concern, they know, hey, I better not support this smog check 2 thing, or I'll be out of office next time the election rolls around.
Well, let's hope that they do begin to feel the heat. Now, one of the things I think that really concerns a lot of people is the education, what's happening as far as education is concerned, and that there seems to be a real drive to try to go around the state legislature for educational programs going directly to the governor or doing everything they can to block any input from the various state legislatures. So the federal funding will go then directly to the governor. What's that all about?
Well, here again, it's control. You're talking about the Gold 2000 program, which is, in my opinion, it would result in more dumbing down of the standards of what we teach our children and the standards they have to meet in order to go from one grade to another. It's tied in so-called to employment, and they want to start programming these youngsters and lock them into a certain career direction early in their school. And you know, I didn't know what I wanted to do and be. I'm a petroleum geologist, but I didn't have any clue as to what I wanted to do until I was a junior in college. But now they want to lock these students in early on before they really make an intelligent decision on what they want to do. And once they're locked in, they have to proceed along that course. Otherwise, they don't get this certificate that they have to have in order to get a job or to move on up to a higher level of education. It goes back to there's nothing in the Constitution, Dr. Stan, that gives the federal government any authority whatsoever over public education in this country. Yet they've taken it. And not enough governors or state legislators have stood up and said, federal government, look at Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution. All your powers are there. We, the states and the people, put a limit on your powers when we created this constitutional republic and when we wrote this Constitution, and we did not give you any power over public education. And you look at them, there are 17 powers that were given to the federal government, and that's all, no more. The 18th one only gives them the authority to implement the other 17. There's nothing there about public education. Yet, they have come in, they've created this U.S. Department of Education, they've come in now, and they, of course, take our tax money, and then they hold that as a club over us and use that as a weapon to force the states and the local school boards into kowtowing and doing what the federal education leaders want them to do. Otherwise, you don't get your money.
And, of course, they've progressively dumbed down generation after generation of our young people. Well, let's just take another quick break here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this afternoon, Senator Don Rogers. Our telephone number, if you have a question or comment, 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY if you're outside the Santa Cruz, Monterey Bay 408 calling district. Now, you know, there's a lot of things going on in California. One of them is the California Civil Rights Initiative, where the people overwhelmingly voted to say that we don't want to discriminate against whites or anybody else based upon their color, and that society should be colorblind. That's what the Civil Rights Bill said. That was what Congress voted for. And suddenly we've got institutionalized discrimination based upon sex or ethnic background. So the people vote to do away with it, and suddenly now we find that some judge has said, I don't think that what the people voted to do to amend the state constitution, this is no longer constitutional. And then now Bill Clinton's going to get into this, and he's told Janet Reno and the Justice Department to come and fight the effort of the people of the state of California to amend our own constitution. I don't understand this.
Federal district judge says that it is unconstitutional for us to clearly say that we want no discrimination based on color, religion, sex, or whatever, gender. Then what he's saying then, that he must believe that it is constitutional to have prejudice,
right,
and to discriminate.
But we're even talking about the state constitution, not the federal constitution.
That's right. That's right. Neither one of them. In other words, and I don't understand this contorted reasoning that these federal judges go through to come up with the answers that they come up with, or their justification for placing a restraining order first and then possibly an injunction later. I know why they do it. They're expressing their own personal political bias.
And, of course, we saw that then, of course, with the immigration. What was that, 187?
Yes, Prop 187.
We saw that with the vote for legalization of marijuana, because that's what it really was. It wasn't marijuana. And so the judges wanted it. So in this case, instead of saying, well, gee, there's a question, you know, whether state law can supersede federal law, they simply said, go ahead and do it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So we have judges who are making legislation, and we no longer have representative government, and we can't even, although I don't necessarily agree with this idea of state initiatives, we have them, they're the law, and suddenly we can do whatever we want to as long as the judges don't go along with it. But the judges really make the law, not the legislature, not the people.
Right. No, and here is one reason why, you know, I'm always hesitant to talk about new laws in changing or amending the Constitution, because I think it's a great document. But maybe the time has come, Dr. Stan, that we need to change the ability of presidents to appoint federal judges for life. Maybe we should change that and say that every 4 years, all federal judges and all U.S. Supreme Court judges have to come back in front of the United States Senate for confirmation, for reconfirmation. That way, if someone gets out of line, just like the judges you're talking about in 207 and Prop 187, they then can be removed from office because they are not reconfirmed. And that would make them accountable through some common sense and accountable to the people. I know originally the reason it was done that way was to, you know, remove them from the political arena and being affected by politics. But the pendulum has swung now so far the other way. Maybe it's time that we put some kind of bridle on these people and at least let them know that, look, you had better perform according to the Constitution, otherwise you're going to be removed.
Amen. Okay, fine. Well, of course, you know, we're just quite disturbing about California Civil Rights Initiative, the immigration problem, because the immigration problem really has a tremendous impact on this state financially, doesn't it?
Oh, yes, something like to the tune of $2 billion a year, when you count educational impact on the medical impact, the welfare impact, providing all of these benefits for people who come into our state illegally. It is a tremendous burden on the California taxpayers. And Judge Fowler, Marianne Fowler, is the one who put the restraining order on Prop 187, and it's still not, it's held in abeyance. And here again, let me just point out to your listeners the contorted reasoning that she used to stop this, the wishes of the almost 60% of the people in this, or I guess over 60% of the people in this state. She said, well, the states have no authority to change federal immigration law. That was her reason. Prop 187 did nothing, did not affect federal immigration law in any way. All it said was that the state of California has the right to determine what benefits or not benefits are provided to people who break our law and come into our state illegally. That was all Prop 187 addressed. It did nothing to change existing federal immigration law. But she used that as a reason for stopping it. See how contorted it is?
Oh, I know, and of course they always tried to mix up legal immigration with illegal immigration.
Oh, yeah.
And we were a nation of immigrants and people who, wanted to stop illegal immigration, really wanted to stop legal immigration and just tear down the Statue of Liberty, and they would go on with all of this, really just confusing the issue. And it's amazing how effectively they can confuse the issue when they have the microphone or they're writing the articles in the newspapers. And yet, despite all the pressure that the controlled media could put on the people, still voted for logic and rationality, and still, of course, one person can hold it up. Now, don't eventually we have the right to appeal that beyond this one judge, or can
yes.
she just keep it there
yes.
for the rest of her life?
Yes, well, now, what she's done, and she's been very clever, she has drug her feet and has not given her final decision on certain issues regarding Prop 187, and she did it to drag it out beyond the November elections, because she did not want the liberal candidates that she supports to be faced with that in their election campaigns. So she kept that on the shelf and on ice for them until after the election was over with. Now she may come out with a final decision, because you have to have that before you can go into appellate court. We kept trying to get her to come on, render your final decision on this, so we then can take it to the appellate court, hopefully get you reversed, and then get it back into a court with a jury and get some fairness into the system. So that's where we are now, and hopefully we can get that done very soon.
But you see, when we have corruption in the courts, what possible way can we get justice?
Well,
this is the thing
again,
that's so frustrating. I mean,
that's what I said earlier. Maybe we're going to have to go back to where these judges have to face the people periodically I'm talking about the federal judges, in order to get some fairness back into this federal system.
Well, I remember that wonderful movie, Judgment at Nuremberg, which was the story of the last war criminals, and they were the judges who did what was politically expedient rather than what was just. And it was one of the great movies. I wish that they'd bring it around again, Judgment at Nuremberg with Spencer Tracy and Burt Lancaster. And there was a wonderful message, a powerful message for America today of what happens to a nation when the judges are no longer interested in justice.
Yes. No, you're right. It's scary. It really is. I'm concerned. I fear for the future of our country, our state and our country, if we don't get this cleaned up.
All right, fine. Well, our telephone number here, 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY, if you're out there in the listening audience and you have a question or comment for Senator Don Rogers, who's spent 18 years in Sacramento battling for your freedom and for mine, trying to make this a better state. How do we stand now as far as industry? Because we had a terrible time a few years ago. So much industry was leaving the state because of the tax system, because of the workman's compensation system, because of all of these crazy environmental restrictions that Tom Hayden had got through with, I've forgotten, Prop 67 or something of the sort. Basically, what is happening overall? Is the economy in the state coming back again, or are we still losing industry?
Well, I think we're still losing the high-paying jobs in this state. Now, you keep hearing, well, the economy is looking better, and things are up, and people are spending money at Christmas time and all of that. But I look at what happens here in my part of the state, in Kern County and Tulare County and Kings County and Fresno County. The unemployment rate down here in this part of California varies anywhere from 14 to 17%. That is awfully high. Now, that is the numbers that they will admit to. I think if you really looked at the true number, it would be even higher than that, because if you're unemployed and you stop looking for a job, then all of a sudden you're no longer classed as being unemployed, even though you may not have a job. So the numbers, I think, are not really a true reflection on the gravity of the situation here in this part of California.
All right, fine. Senator Rogers, can you hear me all right?
Sure.
Okay, we are sort of fading a little.
Was I?
No, well, that may not have been your fault. There may
have
something here.
Okay.
We're going to take our last break for
that. So we're still losing because we still have a lot, I think, over-regulation of businesses. We're still one of the highest taxing states in the nation when it comes to business and people. Until we turn that around, we're really not going to see a lot of businesses coming back into California or expanding here in California. I still hear of businesses that are leaving, not coming in.
Sure. Well, of course, it's the Marxist influence in Sacramento. We have so many people who really believe in statism there and want the all-powerful state to provide for everything from the people from the cradle to the grave, which is basically what Marxism is really all about.
Right. And it's the wrong way to go. The people perform better. They are better off when they have more freedom, not less.
Amen.
So we should be after removing lightening the tax burden, removing over-regulation, and that way, and that's the only way that we're going to get the businesses back and the jobs back into this state.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this afternoon, Senator Donald Rogers, formerly of the southern part of our state, down around Fresno and surrounding counties there, King County. Our telephone number, if you'd like to call him, 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. And, of course, we're talking about really what's happening in California. But let's just take a little wider perspective. Senator Rogers, what do you think about the impact of NAFTA and GATT on industry here in California and the western United States?
Well, I think it's a negative effect. I'm concerned about it. I opposed NAFTA and GATT from the get-go because I'm probably one of the few legislators that took the time to go over and read the NAFTA agreement. I took an afternoon off and went across the street from the Capitol to the State Library, checked out the five volumes, and I read them. Now, the first two are the ones that have the agreement. The last three volumes are just tariff tables. So I didn't spend any time on those. But let me tell you, if you read that agreement and don't come away as frightened as I was, then there's something wrong. because it provides no protection for American businesses. They set up the three-member council, one representative from the United States, one from Mexico, and one from Canada, and they make a decision. They can charge an American business with a violation, and it could be up to $25 million for a violation. And if two of the three members of that council agree that it's a violation, then you have no appeal rights. You're stuck. Now, Canada, they had much more foresight than Mexico and America, and I wonder where our representatives were when the negotiations were going on. Canada put into the agreement that in Canada, Canadian business cannot be fined, this huge, humongous fine, unless a Canadian court agrees and supports this decision. We don't have that protection in America, and Mexico doesn't have that protection. Where were our representatives whenever it was being negotiated? But they have no protection. And, of course, GATT is even worse than NAFTA because it covers, you know, we're one vote in GATT, I think, out of about 130 or 40 different members. And here again, we have very little control. We can be, our businesses can be charged and fined with an agreement by the so-called council. So what happened to our sovereignty, Dr. Stan? The protection and of our American businesses, the American people, and the sovereignty of the United States of America. We gave it up. NAFTA and GATT both undermine it to a large degree. And I think that, you know, the Congress, with a 6 months' notice, can get us out of both NAFTA and GATT. I say it's time we gave that notice and we got out of that agreement. Now, I'm for free trade, not free trade, I'm for fair trade, not free trade, but I'm for trade agreements with all countries, but not this NAFTA agreement and not this GATT agreement. They're both bad news for our country. So let's go and say, we'll trade with you, any country in the world, on a fair basis. You lower your tariff, we lower ours. You raise yours, we're going to raise ours. So we're talking about fair trade, not free trade.
Sure, of course.
And there's a big difference.
And, of course, these really are not free trade because we lower our tariffs and they don't necessarily have to lower theirs.
That's right.
Let's go to Bob. Hi, Bob.
Hello, Dr. Stan.
Question or comment?
Oh, question. All these years I've been looking at the pink slip of my car. How come it says owner certificate, State of California? Why doesn't it say certificate of origin and then my name?
No, I'm sorry. Are we talking about your car?
Oh, you're talking about smog check, too.
Okay.
And how the state government here has got this little game where they force you to sign over power of attorney.
I don't really understand. How do you mean they force you to...
Well, let's see. They've got certificates of origin is where the car is originally manufactured from.
Right.
Now, how come when you go down the car dealership, they force you to sign all these papers? If you read the small print, you're giving power of attorney to the state to take your car and then license you and give you the permit to run it.
Yeah, Dr. Stan?
Yes. The certificate of origin as opposed to the state of California's owner certificate, of which I'm the registered owner.
Okay, let's ask.
Dr. Stan, Bob's absolutely right. You know, most people think whenever they buy a car and they get the pink slip and the title that they own the car. Not so. He's right. If you look at the fine print, you give up that right. Now, the whoever gets the right from the point of origin is the one that has the true title of the car. You don't have that. You give that up, and that's why a lot of people are concerned, because the state of California, the DMV, can come in, and they really are the ones that own the title to your automobile.
I never heard that before.
Yes, sir.
That way they can say what gas to use and what things you have to have in that car, and whether you can drive it or you can't drive it, huh?
That's right. Yeah, Bob's right. It's frightening. Of course, not many people know about it, and we all continue to go along. Well, if you got the pink slip, you own the car, and if you sell the car, you can transfer the pink slip and all that. But if you look at the fine print, when it comes down, when the rubber meets the road, so to speak, the state owns your car.
Okay, Bob, your point's well taken. I learned something from you.
Oh, I learn a lot from you all the time. Thanks for your show.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Thank you, yes.
Okay, fine. Well, you know, there's so many little things out there that the average citizen has no idea of what's going on. The average citizen has no idea of the War Powers Act that is used by many of our courts to expand their power over our lives. And the average citizen doesn't even understand the Constitution. I understand that year after year, you and other American legislators tried to get legislation passed that would require teaching the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, and the Bill of Rights, and the socialists and the left-wingers there wouldn't pass legislation of that nature?
No, you're right. 2 years ago, we had a bill that came on the Senate floor, and it was a very good bill. I thought I supported it. I got up and debated in support of it, talked in support of it, and it simply said this, that in the California high schools that we would require a course to be taught teaching the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and the Federalist Papers. And then the students would be tested to find out how much they learned and retained. Do you know that we couldn't get 21 votes on the state Senate floor to pass that bill? And the chairman of the Senate Education Committee got up and spoke against the bill. And you know the reason he gave for not wanting to vote for the bill? He said, we don't want to clutter up the curriculum of our state high schools with a trivia like this.
How about maybe black English? You think he'd vote for that?
I don't know. You'd have to ask him, I guess. Maybe he would, but, you know, I was astounded and very disappointed. And, you know, I think that probably instead of only requiring high school students to take a course of study on the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, and the Bill of Rights, we ought to require the legislators to take a course and pass the test on it.
Amen. I think you're absolutely right. I don't think anybody should be in our state or federal legislature where they take an oath to uphold the Constitution if they don't know what the Constitution says. I'll never forget talking to a young man who was running for Congress about a year and a half ago, and I asked him, we had a little meeting together and with a number of people asking him questions, and I said, what do you think about the Tenth Amendment movement? And he said, what's the Tenth Amendment? A long hesitation.
Boy.
I mean, I just couldn't believe it. And then I said, well, how about the Second Amendment and the controversy? And he looked at me and he said, does that deal with guns? And so, I agree with you totally. I don't think anybody should run for office unless they are totally schooled and totally dedicated to the Constitution, which is the foundation of our freedom. Well, Senator, I want to thank you so very much for being with us this afternoon. It's always a pleasure, and I hope we can call on you from time to time now that you're not have all the demands of Sacramento to keep us abreast of what's going on.
Okay, Dr. Stan, I'd be happy to. You call me anytime. It's always a pleasure to be on your show, and I want to thank you and Radio Liberty for giving the people, your listening audience, the truth and information that they probably can't get anywhere else. So you keep up the good work, and I wish you and all of your listeners a happy holiday.
And you, too, sir. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
Okay, fine. Well, that was Senator Don Rogers, 18 years in the legislature, certainly, in my estimation, one of the most outstanding champions of freedom that we had there, and he was always trying to get people to adhere to the Constitution. But, you know, people really need to understand our Constitution. We have a 10-point program that we put out on what you can do to be effective in this battle. If you'd like to get a copy of it, you can send us a self-addressed stamped envelope to Post Office Box 13 in Santa Cruz, 95063. Point number two in our 10-point program is to understand the foundations of our freedom. Why is America different than other nations? Why, for almost 200 years, have other nations tried to emulate what we had here? And, of course, we're losing what we had because we've turned our back on these concepts of limited government, because limited government and liberty were synonymous, and total government and tyranny were synonymous. And now we have people in Washington, D.C., who really believe that we need a dictatorship in America, all power in elected officials. And, of course, that was the antithesis of our concept of freedom, where the power of government was to be limited by the change of the Constitution, for that government governed best, that governed the least. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back with you tomorrow, and then, of course, we're going to take off Christmas Eve and Christmas, so we can have some time with our families. We will be with you tomorrow afternoon with Izola Foster. You won't want to miss Izola. She's an amazing woman. So until tomorrow, Dr. Stan, goodbye, and may the Lord be with you.
For this or any other message from Dr. Stan at Radio Liberty, you can call 1-800-544-8927 or write Radio Liberty at P.O. Box 13, Santa Cruz, California, 95063.